Hardest question always is what? The first question.
I have a question.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your story today. It's a bunch of news.
Thank you.
Someone circled that.
I like thank you. Thank you.
You taught me a very valuable lesson in part of your coaching community about non-negotiable.
Yes.
Which has changed my life.
Me too.
Yeah. Where did you learn it? Was it down?
Yeah. That's a great question. So she said, I teach in this private group that I want you guys all to join. I teach this idea of non-negotiable behavior. And how did I come up with it? Was it a download? What is it actually? And it changed her life. And it's absolutely the fastest thing pragmatically to change your life. So here's what happened. I started to realize most people from these meetups, they have a difficult time reconciling your daily life, your human experience, with something bigger than them. Everybody inherently knows there's something bigger than them, and it's infinite, and it causes so much stress and confusion. Like, this is stupid. Why do I pay a mortgage? Or why do I have to, you know, do this pragmatic thing, drive here? And I have much bigger things in my life than this. And so I was trying to figure out, because I love time, why does this happen? Why is this so confusing to people? And so I started by understanding two different experiences. And it started with Wayne Dyer, who said, right, I'm a human being having a human experience in a spiritual world. Right. And I took it as everybody here has a human experience, or you wouldn't be here. And everybody here has a spiritual experience, an energetic experience, whatever word you want to use. A theoretical experience, I don't care. A religious experience, that's fine. So I started with what we all have in common. Everybody here has a human experience that is dictated by time. The time your heart starts till the time your heart stops. That is the definition of your human experience. Your brain can stop and you're still having a human experience. They can cut your legs off, you're still gonna have a human experience. You can be blind. The experience will be different. Good and bad is all relative, right? So I started looking at, okay, let's start helping people with just the human experience because it's finite. And then I said, so what is common in the human experience besides the heart starting and stopping? And all I could come up with, and it kept coming to me, was 24 hours. The only certainty that I could find in the human experience, the only certainty is that every day, tomorrow, you can't predict anything other than I'm going to get 24 hours like everyone else, unless it's the last day of my life, then you'll be cheated. So now I was able to create this certainty in time of my human experience, something I could really rely on. So once I decided that, I said, what causes problems between the 24 hours every day and this idea of infinite? What really causes the problem is the uncertainty of the infinite. Because it causes so much uncertainty because the human experience cannot fathom, and the human body, mind, soul, and chemistry cannot fathom infinite. No matter how much you think about infinite, the human mind goes to infinite plus one, right? It's just unfathomable. And it causes a whole bunch of fear because we can't be certain about this infinite time, infinite energy, infinite love, infinite protection, something bigger than you. So I said, it's interesting because what happens in the human experience is all these uncertainties happen, which are called what? Circumstances. Interest rates go up, they go down. Stock market goes up, it goes down. The weather changes in a matter of a second, especially if you live in Georgia. And so you make a plan according to just the 24 hours, and then you start making plans for the next 24 hours or weeks or months or years, and it's full of all this uncertainty or circumstance. So what I either downloaded, it came through me, whatever you guys believe, I realized, why not study the relationship to circumstance in the context of 24 hours? And so what I wanted to do was create more certainty in my day. So how do I create more certainty? Take the circumstances out of the equation. Now, you can't do it if you were going to plan 24 hours. You can't take all the circumstances out. But what I realized is, why don't I start with the easiest thing to be non-circumstantial about? Sleep. It's the most powerful thing what we do. We recover and we access information and energy in our sleep. The more information and energy we have from the infinite, and the more we recover, the better we're going to perform in the 24 hours. So I made sleep a non-negotiable, and I'll just use for easy numbers, minimum 8 hours a day of sleep, no matter what happens, with minor exceptions. So, of course, if I scheduled, I call it the Michael Jordan rule. I told someone earlier, right? The Michael Jordan rule. I started saying to myself, when I didn't want to get 8 hours of sleep because I had every circumstance or excuse, I'd say, nope, Michael Jordan's going to be sleeping with me. Definitely want to be there. Or so I made all my non-negotiables. And I also turned it on my friends when they blow me off. So, you know, I invite people to do a lot of shit. So I'm like, hey, you want to come to dinner tonight? Oh, no, can't come to dinner. Too bad Michael Jordan's going to be there. So I do the same thing to myself to make it non-negotiable. Now, in the context of non-negotiable, there are some circumstances where I don't get 8 hours of sleep. So then it becomes a double non-negotiable because I'm not going to stack two L's on my non-negotiable. I'm going to make sure that becomes a super duper extra priority. So if something should happen, I have to rush to the hospital at 1 a.m, I don't get my 8 hours of sleep. I make sure the next day I'm getting a minimum of 8 hours of sleep. So then I took another 4 hours and I prioritized other non-negotiable behavior. 7 days a week, non-negotiable. Why 7 days a week? Because in physics, metaphysics, and quantum physics, there is a rule of exponentiality. It happens in finance too. Is, you know, the rule of 72 is an exponential rule of physics of consistent behavior. So what I realized in time is if I was able and capable of doing something every day for 2 minutes, it was worth 2 hours on a Saturday. 2 minutes a day was worth 2 hours on a Saturday of productivity, accessibility, and gratitude. And if people didn't believe me, I used the Spanish rule, which is, has anyone here ever met a kid who studied Spanish 15 minutes a day, every single day, and didn't get an A? I've never met one kid like that. Every kid I know that studied 15 minutes a day, every day, got an A. How many people know someone like me who studied 15 hours on Sunday for the Monday test and did not get the A? 15 minutes a day is worth 15 hours on a Saturday. So this idea of exponentiality started to create a better human experience because I had exponentiality use of my time. So I have 8 hours of sleep, minimum of an hour on my health, minimum of an hour with my family, minimum of an hour with my finance, minimum time with my faith, study of time, and study of relativity to time. Relativity to time is the meaning I give time, especially the past, because we have to align the meaning of our past with our self-image or our future, because you'll never overachieve your own self-image or your future. So people limit themselves most of the time, not because of the meaning they give the past, what happened in the past, not just to them, what they read about in the past. They're always limiting themselves by giving the wrong meaning to it. So when I went bankrupt, as you heard in there, I gave it the meaning aligned with a new self-image, not one that was going to limit my self-image. So I'll never overachieve my own self-image. So this non-negotiable behavior added up to half of my day. So in essence, what it really means is I've created certainty where most people don't have it. I've alleviated fear from my life or the reaction to fear because I'm certain about half of my day. And most of it, let's be honest, is sleeping. It's really not a big deal. It also gave me a freedom of saying, shit, because 90% of my success comes from my non-negotiable behavior because of the exponentiality time, because of the intention that has to happen when you do something every day. When you pay attention and give intention to things, things coincide. Coincidences happen. Consequences, results that we desire or better happen. So what's so interesting about this is I have so much certainty that 90% of my success is already taken care of, that it gives me this freedom when things are circumstantial to realize really doesn't matter, right? I just got to kind of do my best and prioritize according to the circumstances. But I really don't know what I don't know with the circumstances. But I know that if I stay disciplined in my non-negotiables, I'm going to have this amazing life. So now I can do whatever the F I want with the other 12 hours in the day. And so then it led to also adding in what I call hybrid non-negotiables, which is I started doing things once a week and making sure I did stuff once a week or once a month or twice a week, because it was things that I didn't want to do every day. And when you start doing that, you'll realize how easy life is by alleviating 12 hours of the diseasy of circumstances that you can't control. And also how much more faith you have in something bigger than you, which helps you reconcile your human experience and feel good that you're in this divine direction, protected, promoted. And you have faith that, yeah, these circumstances mean nothing. It's not evidence that I'm going to be where I want to be or better, because I know if I keep non-negotiable behavior, I'm going to be where I want to be or better. And I have faith along that journey, someone's protecting and promoting me along that way. So if anyone wants that, I'll send it to you, that non-negotiable exercise, so you can make your own categories of what's important to you. I do highly suggest having sleep and health as two of them, because they will have exponentiality for everything else for you. If you sleep and recover, access information and energy, and you're healthy, everything else becomes easier as well. So great starting question. Thank you.
Can I give you?
Yes, okay. Of course.
So my new book, Emotional Healing, Toxic Free Living.
Toxic Free Living.
Yeah. So model new behaviors and reset old belief systems, which is what you did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank
so
you.
Could we take a quick picture?
Yeah. Let's take some more questions because people are leaving.
First? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, do you want to take the picture?
Okay. Yeah, we'll do a question.
Yeah.
All right.
Perfect. That works
Thank
for
you.
Me.
Next question.
And let me give this to him.
Okay.
I know that he's your whole
thing.
All right. Next question. Yes, sir.
I've been trying to provide service, but no one needs my service. Like,
oh, great.
Everywhere I go, do you need my help?
Okay.
Do you need an invention?
That's so good. All right. So lots of people, they get so busy working, they forget to make money because of this very reason. So let's start with value and then the ability to articulate that value. So value is derived in only two ways: giving people more of what they like, what's working and what they know, or taking away what they don't like, what doesn't work, and what they don't know. So if you're providing a service that has no value, of course no one's going to want it. Or if you're providing a service of value but are incapable of articulating it, then people don't know and you can't sell a secret. So it's still the same result. Nobody's going to want your service. And so if you're having difficulty, check to make sure that you're asking questions pertaining to the subject matter, topic, or expertise of your product, service, solution, brand. So I know what that is. This is my subject matter, topic, expertise, or my brand. What do you, so if I'm a solar guy, I would ask someone, hey, what do you know about solar? Do you have solar? Do your friends have solar? What do you like about solar? Is it working for you? What's not working for you? What do you know about solar? What don't you know about solar? And then it's easy to say, hey, would it help you if I was able to do this off the grid? So, and we keep on saying, would it help you if, would it help you? Now comes the practice of, from what you've told me, if I was able to help you with giving you more of what you like, taking away what you don't like, it'd be worth this much money. Therefore, for less than that money that it'd be worth, I would do that for you. Does that sound fair? Or could you see any reason you won't want to move forward? The statistical success is incredible. But most people, number one, they get so confused about value. They feature and benefit on people without aligning the value that that person has by knowing what they works, doesn't work, like, doesn't like, no, doesn't know. And then two, even when they do that, they don't practice articulating the value. So they lose credibility and emotional attachment, and people buy an emotion for logical reasons. If there's no logic and no emotion, your statistical success fails and they can't sell a secret. How many times have people articulated poorly something and then somebody else articulated the exact same thing and they got your business? Sometimes it's within the same company. I've sat there and guys have pitched me and I'm like, I'm not invested in this. This is sucks. And then the other guy's, oh no, you know what? He's an engineer. You need to talk to the COO. Okay. I talked to the COO and I'm like, oh shit, that's awesome. I had no idea that's what that was. So practice the articulation of the quantitative value. Be more interested. Ask questions. Your transition should always be either, would it help you if, or do you know someone that can help me? I'm always digging for those two questions. I want to get to a point. I want to know what you know about the subject matter, topic, or expertise so I can ask you, would it help you if, or do you know someone that can help me? And exponentiality happens in business. You got a question?
I'm partners with Steve, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so now he's Lee.
Yeah, but Lee.
Big client and done.
Yeah.
Peter Estevez, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah, I know Peter well. Yeah, he was with Ron Tenari, and yeah, he's great.
He's with me now here. And,
oh, right on. Yeah, Steve was always amazing. Well, you know, Warren and I were business partners. They're close friends. And then what was the name? Yeah, I was here with the Super Bowl.
When we went, remember that day? We did that thing, and we were all like that, you know? But yeah, so you're wonderful. You're great story. Where do you live?
California, New York.
Yeah. Well, with Steve, we got a company called Integrity in the building.
Awesome.
Can I get a picture?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to answer more questions. You have any? Yeah. Definitely. All right. Next question.
So mine kind of segues from that.
Yeah.
It doesn't amplify, just records.
Okay, great. No problem. We have a security company, Draco Group, and our goal right now is to bring veterans in to give them a new sense of community, right? We're bringing them in from the field where they had a drive, they had a brotherhood. We're trying to pitch that to our clients, our current clients, and new clients, but I'm having difficulty articulating to them why bringing a veteran into your community is going to, it's going to improve their community. It's going to give these veterans a new sense of purpose, a new community to be a part of. And I don't seem to be getting that message across to them in the way that I would have liked to.
Yeah.
Because they are far superior than the average individual in the security industry.
So here's a difficult thing. I work with a lot of vets, is that a lot of times we approach the capabilities of a veteran from the emotional aspect of it. So we say, oh, well, would it mean a lot to them? And business is business. And so my perspective of helping vets, and I do a lot in all different industries, is I focus on the skills, the knowledge, and the desire aspect. So I talk about our employees have the greatest skill in security, the greatest knowledge of who and what, that community, have been around the community of security people, and they have a desire that they must be what they can be. And the reason I know that as they've been of service to our country for 12 years, 20 years, 10 years, 5 years. So we have the most capable employees. That's why you want to hire us. And obviously giving an opportunity to some of these people is also a good deed. But I stick to just the skills, knowledge, and desire because that's why they're better. And when we start in this whole community aspect, it doesn't translate to if I'm a business looking for the best security company, I don't really give a shit about a community, right? I want the guys who have incredible skills, have been doing it for 10 years, if it's cybersecurity, if it's personal protection, whatever it is, they've been doing it for that long with the biggest threats every single day, and they've attained these skills and knowledge that no one else has and a desire that is going to be engaged and have character like integrity, loyalty, all the things that we don't get from hiring some guy that got out of prison, who I also want to help.
Sure, but in a different capacity.
Of course.
And they deserve a different capacity.
Correct.
Than veterans do.
So I would really hone in on articulating skills, knowledge, and desire, and then blend in, without using the word community, this aspect of, look, it also is a good deed that, you know, we have a epidemic not hiring the most skilled people, and they are not great at selling themselves because they're so service oriented.
Yeah, I just feel like they're not hearing that. They don't see the importance the way that we see the importance.
Same with athletes. It's hard. They see it as a transition, and when you think about skills, knowledge, and desire, like I will hire, and I love women's sports because it proves my point more than anything. So 90% of all C-level executives in the Fortune 500 that are women, 90% played college sports. That cannot be an accident. So it has to be the same thing with men. And, you know, depending on the level, their identity is different.
So
Right. See, because their identity is all about sports, so they can't see. Same with the military, right? Their identity is ingrained in them. Where women athletes, it's not their identity, right? They're really good at it.
It's just built into them. Those things special is built into them.
It is. But they have the same skills. It's just difficult for some athletes to realize that, God, when I went to practice every day and got my ass kicked and showed up the next day 5 minutes early and left last, that's a huge benefit to somebody in the corporate world. I learned all the plays. I executed what I was told. I didn't try to make it, you know, I work with a team knowing if I do my job and everybody else around me, we're going to win. And if I try just to do everyone's job or do something different, then these are all things that make companies win. That's why most of the guys and women that work for me at least played high school sports. All right, next. Yes, please.
On adversity, whenever you had your lowest moment, what did you do next? Like right after.
Yeah.
Somebody's get kicked. What should they do next?
So when you have your low moment or lowest moment, remember, in moments that are not aligned with where you want to be or better, fear is created. A lot of times we don't know really what we're afraid of. A lot of times in the past, it was very obvious. A saber-toothed tiger was walking by your cave. It's very obvious what you're afraid of. In this world, you don't know if it's like past life trauma, womb trauma, toddler, tween, teen, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s trauma. You have no idea what you're afraid of. So when we're at our basement, when we have this low, you know what you're afraid of. But more importantly, in all of the circumstance, you know your reaction to fear. So what's interesting about fear is I spent millions of dollars in therapy, you know, personal development, trying to figure out my trauma. And what I realized is it wasn't the trauma that was getting in the way of my success. It was the reaction to the fear. So here's how people react. So I started looking for clues and patterns of how people react to fear. Here's how they react to fear. A need to be right. You meet someone that has a need to be right, they're afraid of something. I don't know what it is, but I just got to know you have a need to be right, a need to be offended, a need to be separate, a need to be inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, worried. Every time you're worried, it's just a display that you're afraid of something. Every time you're frustrated, every time you're pissed off. Well, the coolest thing about when I got into this perspective of, okay, I'm at my low, I'm having a reaction to fear, whatever that reaction was, usually it was worry, inferiority, you know, which leads to depression, which is another reaction to fear. But what I started to realize is, holy shit, when I'm reacting to fear, it's instant and obvious. When someone cuts me off and I get pissed, I don't need a therapist to tell me I'm pissed, right? They tell you got to go to anger management with some therapist. No, I really don't. What I have to realize is, what do I do when I'm pissed, worried, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, when I'm interfering with my best self? What do I do when I hit a low? And so what I realized was most people, when they react to fear, they actually, and Wayne Dyer said it simply, right? What you resist persists. Most people try to outlogic it, analyze it, go over it, under it, through it, around it, resist it, lie to it, manipulate it, cheat it, or deny it. All have really bad outcomes, and it's a waste of time. But it's usually counter or duplicative negatives, because not only is it a waste of time, it's usually sending you in the wrong direction, and now you got more work to do. And biochemically, by the way, every time that you continue in that resistance, another dose of cortisol comes, so you get a six-second dose of cortisol, which takes 180 seconds to dissipate out of your system. Depending on your own genetic and energetic inheritance, some people can handle more cortisol. They can survive. They manage. That's why just like functioning alcoholics, functioning drug addicts, it's just their genetics that can handle it better. It's still going to eventually kill you or send you in the wrong direction. So what is the mechanism to use when we're at our low or we just react to fear? It's actually counterintuitive. It's stopping. See, I believe free will is being able to stop when we react to fear and breathe and then recollect, remind, and remember God, your God, not mine. Remember, recollect that I'm protected, promoted, loved, and perfected. Even though there's no evidence right now, evidence is contrary, I'm at the all-time low, that my job is to have faith that God's protecting me, promoting me, loving and perfecting me. I need to find the light, the love, and the lesson in this. And I would try to out-logic it. I'd say, oh, let it go. Let it go. You know what? I sat there saying I let it go. My emotions didn't change. And when I woke up, I still was worried, but it seemed to have grown. So instead, I stop, I breathe, I drop, I get to center. I remind myself that I'm part of this omniscient, all-powerful, protective source. And then I move in the right direction. So I shorten that distance of resistance. And so, like I talked about earlier, I have so much energy. I promise you, people shadow me. I don't care what age you are. You'll be sleeping in my backseat by 4 o'clock. And I'm not in better shape than most of those people. I'm definitely not younger. I'm not stronger, faster. I just interfere and have learned through what your question is asking. I interfere less with an infinite amount of energy, with an infinite amount of ease, information, inspiration. I just interfere less because I have a minutes and moments strategy. I don't take days, weeks, months, and years accelerating through resistance. And so if you are in one of those moments and you're angry, upset, frustrated, worried, guilty, resentful, separate, inferior, superior, just stop. It's not easy, but you'll shorten that distance how long it takes. Think great, quick question. All right, who has the next question? Anyone? No more questions. Oh, Virgil, let's steal your mic back.
At the crossroads of success, there's the weird blend of sacrifice and manifesting what it is that you want, or the giving and the receiving. I think you're one of the greatest at explaining that. Talk to us about the definitions for you of sacrifice and manifest.
Yeah, yes, sir. So what's the difference sacrificing and manifesting? So sacrificing is a word of scarcity. It's a word of quid pro quo, it's a word of negotiation. It means there's not more than enough of everything. What we're really doing is investing. There's no sacrifice. I'm investing in this. And it really is in the realm of giving and receiving. So most people believe, and I do, the more you give, the more you receive. Absolutely true, but there's a lot in between there. And so when I've done research on religions, philosophies, spiritualities, and theories, most of the text says this: the more you give, the more you're given. Now, most people, they take the wrong perspective. They don't see what they're given, right? We call that entitlement. Most people don't see what they're given. Most people, one of the things when you say I'm one of the best at it, most people could not lose over $100 million, go bankrupt and lose their mom's house and see all that they're given. They would feel punished. They wouldn't believe the more you give, the more you receive. And so when your perspective is, I'm completely faithful that there's more than enough, so I'm going to give everything I can to everyone else. I'm going to help as much as I can. I'm going to give it all away, but I'm going to seek what I'm given. So all the circumstances, the consequences, the results, the outcomes, the coincidences, even if they're not evidentiary of being positive or in the divine direction that I think I want to be in, I know I am. My job is to figure out what I'm being given here. I lose my job. What am I being given here? What options, opportunities, and touches of favor are here? That didn't work out the way I wanted it to work out, right? I just went through, you know, this 1031 exchange and probably not going to get the house that we thought we wanted. And my first thing is, okay, good. I wonder what the next house is going to be. It's going to be better. It always is. When I was young, it was like tears and we lost our dream house and we'll never find anything like that. And, you know, no, I know what I'm given. Now, beyond what we're given is the real challenge is that most people do not like to receive. They don't realize that receiving and giving are one. And if you don't believe me, think about how good you feel when you give. When you're capable and able of helping another person, you're capable and able of giving to another person is one of the ultimate highs in your life. Fulfilling, passion. So every time you receive, you are giving that high to the person that's giving it to you. Every time you say, no, it's okay. Oh, you don't have to do that. Oh, no, you know, somebody else. Or then that means it's not enough for. What are you doing? You're cheating someone from feeling you're not giving to them. So getting in this infinite loop of I'm going to give more, be given more, receive more. And then the ultimate one that creates true abundance in this idea of investing in yourself, not sacrificing. I made an investment in myself when I went to law school. I didn't sacrifice it just because all my friends were partying. I made an investment in myself. I didn't sacrifice. Huh?
You wanted to wait till later.
Exactly. Well, things happen very slowly, then all of a sudden. And so in the end, though, true faith, in my opinion, are the people that ask. People who ask for more, ask for help, they believe there's more than enough of everything. They don't believe that just because I'm asking, there's not going to be enough for someone else. They just because I'm asking, I'm making you sacrifice. No, I'm giving you an opportunity to feel good and invest in this, whatever it is, by helping me, invest in the company, invest in whatever it is. It's an infinite loop of giving. So here's what I see from vets, teachers, first responders, a lot of moms, almost all of them, is they all give and they all think the more I give up, more I receive, but they all feel bad about receiving and none of them ask for help or ask for more. So they give more than everybody else and they receive less back and never ask for any more. So what happens? It's a zero sum game. I'm not a great mathematician, but if you give more than you get back, you're going to end up at zero if you don't ask for more. So instead of being in the zero sum game of all these kind, generous people, I believe and train people to give more, to be given more, and to see what they're given through faith, to receive more than from what they're given more of, and then ask for more than more. So then they're giving more than more, being given more than more, receiving more than more, asking for more than more than more. You see where I'm going to end up when I'm 80? With more than enough of everything for everyone. And I'm just going to keep on giving it. Warren Buffett will give more than any other human being when he passes. And when he was my age, people gave him shit, just so you that may not have known or aren't old enough. People gave Warren Buffett shit when he was my age because he wasn't given enough to charity. He said, oh, I'm giving everything to charity when I die, but every penny I give today is going to be $10,000 more when I pass. So I'm not going to cheat. I'm going to give some, but you're making me feel bad because you think I don't give enough because I have all this money and I'm only giving a certain percentage. I'm giving it all in the end. So my goal is to have the most in the end, more than enough, more than more, not just more. And that's exactly, now, the other aspect beyond the giving part with Warren Buffett that I love is not only is he going to give the most money ever when he passes, but he's inspired the most billionaires to what? Join him by giving at least half of their wealth away when they pass.
Exactly.
So in essence, not only is he giving more than any other human that's ever given, but in totality, by empowering others through this abundant attitude, he's going to give 20 or 30 times more than any other human has ever given. And yet he got shit even when he was 57 years old for not giving enough. But he understood the infinite loop of giving. All right, next question.
My name is Benjamin Woods, man.
Hi.
I want to say this. You talk about the principle of gratitude. I'm 27 years old, and I've grabbed onto it. Like, I got it. And not a lot of people in my generation know about it, so they're going to have to go through this life of just trying to understand. I want to ask you this question. As a 27-year-old that's new, as a married young man of God, I'm walking down this path where I'm living in the manna, knowing that whatever my portion is today, good or bad, I just must accept it. What's a nugget? What's some advice that you would have for me going on this road, just in business and life? What's a good principle that I can apply to?
Yeah, so what's the best piece of advice for someone that's on a journey of faith to help other people, 27 years old, wants to live in gratitude, and you're on your way? The best piece of advice I can give you, beyond saying thank you and practicing your gratitude, because the simple things to do are simple not to do, is three words. It goes to everybody. It's the best advice I know. Ask for help. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind the fastest way to get to where you want to be, to get what you want in your life, is to find someone that's already there, ask them for directions, and then find someone and help them get to where they want to be. If you do both of those, I call it knowing your who. Most people I help, they don't know their what they want each day within the 24 increments using non-negotiable, negotiable behavior. But if you know what you want today in the divine direction of where you think you want to be, then you better start knowing your who. Once you know your what, who can I help and who can help me? That's going to get you there. But you need to know, right, a definite purpose, a divine direction of what you want today in a trajectory or divine direction of where you think you want to be. Because we know circumstances, time, emotion, value all change instantly when we come up with a plan. That's why people say you come up with a well-developed plan, God will laugh at you, guaranteed. But if you know what you want, who you can help and who can help you, you will get there so much faster in gratitude. But ask for help. Great question. Well, thank you guys for taking the time.